All right. We're back.
Hello.
How are you doing, Steph?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Carrie?
You know, I'm doing okay. I think we're all just kind of figuring it out, making do with what we've got. And at least we have all this wonderful technology that we can do our podcasting and our meetup with friends and all that good stuff. So.
Yeah, that's true. Watching movies and talking about them, not canceled.
Nope, never. In the world that I live in, that should never be the case. I don't know if I could live in a world like that where those things aren't available to do all the time. Yeah, so last time, our comeback episode, we did our horror Oscars. And now, or excuse me, we did our top 10 of the decade. Now we're about to do our horror Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good that we kind of waited a little bit because I saw a couple things a little bit late that I am glad I was able to add to my list.
Mm.
How about you?
You know what's funny? I actually haven't been watching quite as many movies as I thought I would be in this time, but we can talk about what we've been watching. Do you want to do that after?
Yeah, I think we do the Oscars first and do what we saw afterwards. I always think that's a good way to go.
Okay, cool. Well, I don't remember the order we're doing categories in. Do you want to kick things off?
Sure. You know, I'm thinking we'll start. Let's start with visual effects.
Okay.
And before we get into the you know, the acting, directing categories, film categories, all the good stuff. So what would you say was your pick for visual effects for 2019 horror films?
This was a tough one because a part of me wanted to put Color Out of Space for every category, but instead I'm going with Critters Attack. So low budget, like totally practical effects, part of the Critters franchise. Dee Wallace comes back. This time she's a bounty hunter. It's been over 30 years since the first Critters movie. I loved looking at how they built the Krites, like the puppets. When you see them in like ball mode, it's actually a basketball covered in fur being hurled down the street. So I'm very pro Critters Attack. What did you go with for best effects?
Excellent. You know, I did not see the new rebooted Critters. I am excited to watch it, and I'm going to have to see it at some point. Is it a series, correct?
No, there's also a Critters series that's on Shudder and has Gilbert Gottfried and is not as good. But I would argue Critters Attack, the feature-length film, also direct-to-video or video-on-demand. Not the greatest, but there are some great moments. And see the actual Critters, including this, like, this good female white Mogwai-style critter who, like, helps the humans.
Okay.
That design's pretty cool. There's this one...
Not really quite all the way critter, like, still kind of cute.
She's all good. She wants to help people.
Ooh, okay, I like that.
And she has eyelashes.
Wow.
But yeah, I loved Critters Attack. There's this great scene, the shower scene, where this guy reaches for a loofah, but it's a Krite. And just know, they built these critters. They look great.
If the critters, if you could make them sort of docile or tame them, they would make a great loofah. I think that's, I think that really could work. You know, you'd have to wash it regularly, of course. And, you know, but yeah, a talking loofah might be a little weird too. I don't know. So I picked the effects team Rodeo Effects for the film Crawl.
Ah, love Crawl.
Thomas Montminy Brodeau, very French. I'm sure I just absolutely just slaughtered that name. But yes, I thought the visual effects for Crawl were fantastic. You know, that's the Alejandra Aja creature feature. And I think it's actually one of Aja's best films, just as an overall film. In addition to, it's a great B-movie thriller. You've got a great lead actress. You've got some really, you know, a great vet in Barry Pepper. And the alligators, though, are fantastic, or the crocs, rather. They do a really good job of making the movements look realistic. There are some great puppets up for some up-close scenes that the special effects team created that I thought were great as well. But overall, I thought for one of those films where most of it is VFX, it looked fantastic.
Yeah, it looks awesome. for sure.
And just a really, really enjoyable, fun thrill ride of a movie. I had a blast.
I know that alligator is great. In terms of, if you think about all of our best killer animal movies, that's got to be one of the new classics.
It's got to be. I mean, like immediately the day it was released, like it shot up into the annals of, because, you know, you look back at movies like Anaconda and it was kind of almost dated when it came out. You know, and so you look back at things like that and, you know, here we are, you know, probably 20 years later and this has got to be up there. So, yeah. Okay. For the next category, I was thinking that we could go with, let's see here. What about screenplay? What do you think? Or were you thinking something? Or do you have another category you want to do first?
Oh, I didn't pick a screenplay. Are we going any screenplay? Because I can pick something right now. Or are we going original screenplay?
I think either one. We're kind of, you know, in the past we sort of just combined that category as far as whether it's original or not. I picked The Lighthouse actually for that one. I thought the screenplay was really, really interesting. It ties in a lot of Greek mythology. You know, the Zeus, Prometheus. Mm-hmm. You've got this wonderful, wonderful monologue from Willem Dafoe in the middle of the film where he...
We'll get back to Willem Dafoe in The Lighthouse.
What's that?
Yeah, we'll get back to Willem Dafoe in The Lighthouse for sure.
Oh, we should. I hope we do. And Pattinson and just Robert and Max Eggers, his brother, both of them create... there's just this wonderful sort of palette for these actors to just go nuts. And the screenplay is very, it's very efficient. There's no line that doesn't feel like it belongs there. There's long stretches where you don't have any dialogue whatsoever. So I think that they did a great job with just the screenplay in general.
Yeah. I mean, it's so different from The Witch, but in both cases, you can tell that just the care and the research put into like bringing these characters to life and their dialogue is totally incredible.
Yes. Yes. No, totally agreed. That was a good one. So, you know, we can always come back to that if you want to.
Well, I was going to say, I was trying to find a way in the horror Oscars to sort of shoehorn in Mike Flanagan for Dr. Sleep. I don't know if he actually wrote the screenplay. Do you?
Flanagan? He co-wrote the screenplay. You know, he seems to always have a hand in the writing, which I think makes a huge difference. And he also did as well with Dr. Sleep. Yeah, I think I totally agree. Any way we can get Flanagan in there, I'm all about it.
Yeah, well, as someone who could not quite finish Stephen King's novel, Dr. Sleep, I mean, it goes a little crazier. 9/11 comes up, just stuff like that. I thought that the movie adaptation, Dr. Sleep, was perfect. So in any way that I can fit this in to our horror Oscars, I'm glad that screenplay came up because the story and the way it's used in the movie, the focus on kind of more like empowerment, I feel, as a theme is really great.
You know, at the core of Mike, you know, Mike writes, Mike did write the full screenplay. No one else had any... You know, it was all. Of course, there could have been a script doctor somewhere in there, but he gets the credit for the screenplay. You know, I think he's not only low key one of the great directors in horror cinema, but his screenplays deal with the most humanistic elements of what you can put in a horror film. You know, it's a lot of things about addiction, loneliness, separation, and it manages to make those a core component of these films. So I think that's why they hold up really well so far.
Totally. Do we all want to move on to, did you pick a best foreign language film?
You know, I didn't. I didn't see enough this year to really put that down.
Either did I. But let me tell you about the one that I saw that I think would be impossible to beat.
Okay.
It's the one I watched with you, One Cut of the Dead. And I loved it so fucking much. That movie brought me so much joy. It's this Japanese low-budget movie. I read that it was made for $27,000.
I can see that. I can buy that.
It is so brilliant. Like, it psyched me up both about zombies and about filmmaking. The first chunk of it is this zombie short, which is impressively presented as though it's a one cut, but then it backtracks to have this, like, father-daughter backstory, all these behind the scenes things. And it is so interesting and refreshing and great and earnest. I just thought it was awesome.
It's really different from a lot of films out there in that way. And it has, I think, one of the great conceits is what happens after the first 26 minutes of the movie. Because it really is, it continually defies your expectation as far as what's coming ahead. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really fun. And when you get down to it, One Cut of the Dead is as much a drama as it is a horror film. It's as much a comedy as it's a horror film. So it really does combine all those elements.
Yeah, it's like a totally unique mishmash.
Yes.
And I feel like it came out of nowhere. Like, I feel like I heard about it, then we watched it, and there was no buildup. It wasn't like a film we were anticipating or...
No. You know, first it played at our local theater, Cine, for one night. Mm-hmm. And I think neither of us were able to see it, so we watched it on demand. Or I think we watched it on Shudder, maybe. But yeah, so we got very limited release over here in, stateside. It was really hard to see, so I'm really glad we got that opportunity.
Yeah, same.
So what do you think? So we've got visual effects, screenplay, and foreign film out of the way.
The only other not acting awards I did were music score and costumes.
Okay. What'd you have for music?
Midsummer. And I'm just going to spoil it and say I also picked Midsummer for best costumes. But the music score for Midsummer is haunting. It's great.
It really is. It fits very well with the visual aspect of the film. They go hand in hand. It's as unnerving as what you're seeing visually on screen. Yeah, it does really. It's a really good combo of those. I can't really argue with either of those. I'd probably give my vote to those as well. Although I kind of love the soundtrack for Us because we got to remind ourselves how great I Got a Five on It is.
So, in terms of song Looney. Placement, like songs Looney's. That were like picked for a movie, Us.
I mean, I'm just glad that the Loonies got some credit. I mean, they were a true one-hit wonder, and you know, this kind of put them back on the map for a minute. So gotta love that.
I guess if I were doing a runner-up for costumes, it's again going to be like, I just loved like the Swedish folklore and Midsummer element of the clothing in Midsummer, but also I really liked seeing Rebecca Romijn in Satanic Panic and all of these red dresses and cloaks. I thought whoever designed that did a great job too.
I did not see that one.
Whoa, she still got it. She's like an awesome villain.
I can see that. No, she's a badass in anything I've seen her in.
All right.
Get old Rebecca. No longer the Stamos on there, right?
No. I was sad. I thought they were long haul.
Nah, it's tough. Hollywood's tough. It's a desert of failed marriages, you know? All right. So anyway, we'll get back in. We'll get happy again. We don't want to be sad about the Stamoses.
Did we want to move on to Best Supporting Actor?
I think so.
Are we there?
I think it's about that time.
All right. Who do you have, Carrie?
Okay. So I'm going to go back to my second award win for this year is going to Crawl. And that's going to go to Barry Pepper. I thought he was excellent as the father in Crawl. And right from the get-go, he's dealing with some major, you know, crocodile-related injuries. And he's a tough one. It's hard to keep this guy down throughout the film. And I thought he did a great job with both, being a pure survivor, but also trying to sort of come to some sort of understanding with his daughter, some rapport, some trust. So this movie sort of tests that between the two of them. I thought he did a really good job with that.
I totally agree. You know, I'm so glad that you're nominating things from Crawl because Crawl was awesome and I'm upset at myself for not thinking about it. I'm also upset that I missed it in theaters. I would have loved to have seen it on a big screen.
I didn't see it in theaters either. We watched it in my house and while the TV is pretty big, I would have loved to see it at, say, the AM16, the GTX or something like that. That would have been pretty sweet.
Yeah, it would have been awesome. Well, my best supporting actor is Tommy Chong as the Hermit in Color Out of Space.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. He was perfectly cast. He's like this mystical conspiracy theory hermit living on the property of Nicolas Cage and his family. Well, this crazy stuff's going on. And every time you see him, he like lights up the screen. And spoiler, even when he becomes a corpse, he's awesome. Every time you see him on the screen, he's great. Tommy Chong.
Couldn't agree more. What a great movie that was. It was hard to find categories for that film because there was always one main person that would come up there that would take potential vote away from Color Out of Space. But it's right up there with like every category I have this year.
Oh, God, I loved it. And actually, I got a copy for my birthday, so I might rewatch it tonight.
Oh, all right, all right. Nice. Well, okay, well, excellent. So next would be supporting actress. And who was your choice for that?
I cheated a little bit. Arguably, this is a leading lady, but because I felt the story was more centered on a teenage girl protagonist, I kind of shoehorned in Octavia Spencer as Sue Ann Ellington, a.k.a. Ma, in Ma, for my best supporting actress.
Okay.
If you ever get a chance to watch Ma.
It's a controversial pick since her name is and face is like on the poster, but hey.
I know, I like but it. I'm telling you, the Dana Silver teenager is the main character.
Okay. So she has more of a supporting actress's amount of screen time, basically.
It's debatable, but this is our podcast and we do what we want.
No, hey, I like the controversial pick. I'm rolling with you on that. We will never stray away from controversy. Well, maybe we will a little bit, but not too much. So I'm totally okay with that. I have a weird one, so, you know.
The thing about Ma is that script is a B movie. It is straight up a B movie. Could be a rated R Lifetime movie, but they've cast Octavia Spencer, Allison Janney, Juliette Lewis, just these like A-list actresses who are like serving it up. I think Octavia Spencer, much like who I put for best actress, I don't think she can do any wrong. I think she's always going to go for it and she's always amazing. She doesn't shy away from genre and she doesn't shy away from extreme emotion.
I love that. Totally agreed.
Who'd you pick?
I picked kind of a dark horse candidate. She was the Saturn Award winner in 1993. For best actress for the film Groundhog Day. This is Andie MacDowell.
Ready or Not.
In Ready or Not. I hadn't seen Andie MacDowell in a long time. And I thought she was just absolutely delightful. A lot of fun. She is the matriarch of this incredibly well-to-do family. She and her husband kind of rule the family with an iron fist, I get the sense. But at the same time, as things start to break down in Ready or Not and everything goes haywire, you see her character sort of let down her guard a little bit and kind of just accept that things are just completely fucked. And I thought she did a really good job with that.
I love Andie MacDowell. I was glad. I thought everyone who was cast in Ready or Not was totally awesome. And I was happy to see her again. I mean, at first you think she's kind of sympathetic, like the character she's playing. You're just like, oh, she's very pro this marriage and this bride. But then you're just like, she's as evil as the rest of them.
Oh, she lets it go. She just, things just kind of flow real, real free and easy after that. She just kind of, there's no fucks given, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and it's fun to hear her swear like nonstop.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Really, really crude. So that was fun. That was a lot of fun. Yep. So there's our supporting actress category. That's Octavia Spencer and Andie MacDowell. Now, do you want to do best director? Let's do director.
Okay.
All right. So best director, 2019 horror, what would be your choice?
Richard Stanley, Color Out of Space. I'm like, welcome back, Richard Stanley. He's so awesome. Like, if y'all haven't seen Hardware, he's just so good. I'm so happy he's back. I hope that his Lovecraft trilogy happens and that he teams up with Nicolas Cage again. I loved hearing background stories about him purchasing meteorites for healing powers, like totally random things. He just seems so cool.
Yes, it's such a strange and fun film. It made me go back and watch Hardware again and watch the even just the documentary for the 1996 colossal bomb, Island of Dr. Moreau.
That documentary is awesome.
It's a fascinating documentary. It's called, I think it's called Island of Lost Souls, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. or Lost Souls maybe. And you get a little bit of Richard Stanley because he was booted off the set early on during the production, but you do get a sense of from him of sort of what happened. So it's kind of interesting. It's something you need to see if you're a fan of his, just to get a sense of where he was at, why he got kicked off, what he did after that. I think it kind of set him back for a while, actually. So it was good to see him come back with Color Out of Space, really having not done a lot stateside in a long time.
So. He's had a wild life story if you look it up. And just regarding Color Out of Space, I want to say another controversial thing. I'm not a Lovecraft fan. I think maybe I didn't come to him later in life. I started reading Lovecraft in middle school, but it's never spoken to me. It's always been just not for me. And like in today's PC lens, it's just totally shitty. So, I mean, I think the movie's 100 times better than the short story.
Right. Okay, so it's a tough one for me.
Yeah.
For best director. It was really between two people. One of the films, this is going to be like by a nose, my choice for best director. Because both films did what they wanted very well. One of them, while not as perfect as the other, was so much better than I had any idea it could be. I kind of got to give it to him on this one. So my best director is going to be Mike Flanagan for Dr. Sleep.
And it is
not a perfect film. There are certain parts of it that I'm not in love with. I'm not in love with the final scene on the stairs at the Overlook. There's a few things. However, there's so much good in it. So much more than anything I didn't like or anything that was a detractor, that I thought to be able to adapt a Stephen King book, and A, Stephen King likes it, and B, Stephen King fans like it, that doesn't happen all the time. So I thought that he did a really good job of incorporating all the great elements from The Shining, but adding the new mythology of Dr. Sleep in there. And I thought it was, again, surprisingly better than I thought.
Dr. Sleep totally blew me away. Like I said earlier, or like we've talked about before, Mike Flanagan is both a Stephen King expert and he knows how to turn these stories into movies, because who would have thought Gerald's Game would have been a great movie?
It swept our Oscars. Well, didn't sweep them that year, I guess, but it was on both of our Oscars. It got my best actress for sure. Yeah, you know, I think Stephen King books are really hard to adapt because there is such an emotional element to them. And that's kind of Flanagan's specialty. And I think that's why it works. He's able to pull out the emotional elements of the Stephen King novels with the same grace he's able to stage these great horror scenes. And so I think it really is a good mix, the two of them.
I know. I can't wait to see whatever he... So if he adapts another one, it'll be his third Stephen King adaptation?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, he's got to do it. It'll be great.
Now, my number two by a nose was Ari Aster for Midsommar.
Ooh, yeah, totally. That was my second choice.
I mean, it's tough. It's tough to say.
No, I can't decide. These are all such good directors.
I know. It's painful to try to choose one. We had to do it. So, all right. So there's best director. Now, on to best actor.
All right. I'm just going to go first because we've already briefly touched on it. But I picked Willem Dafoe as the irritable lighthouse keeper. You picked the same? Thomas Waite.
Yep.
He's abusive. He just refuses to give access to Robert Pattinson's character to this lantern room.
Yes.
They run out of alcohol and they start drinking turpentine. And they're stuck together during the storm. And while they're both great, because I think Robert Pattinson has proven that he's an amazing actor as well.
Absolutely.
I think Willem Dafoe, I just couldn't get over him. Every time he spoke or just like looking at him, I like died. I loved it so much. The whole like, why'd you have to spill your beans thing? And like, oh God, he's so good.
Dafoe is great. And you know, one thing I've been going back, I recently rewatched Streets of Fire.
Oh shit.
And I realized when I say rewatched, I realized I'd never seen Streets of Fire. And of course, you know, he's the main bad guy in Streets of Fire. And so I've actually reason, seen a few different films recently, older films of the 80s with Defoe in it, and just it gives me an appreciation for just how good he is. And, you know, the other thing is, when you talk to directors who have worked with Willem Dafoe, every single one of them says the guy is like the consummate professional. Like, you never have to worry about Dafoe. Aww. He's always there, always does his thing, always brings the intensity. So he's, and he seems in real life to be just a pretty chill dude. So,
is he your greatest living villain actor?
No, absolutely. It'd be hard to find somebody who's consistently filled that role for what? I mean, he was in the Streets of Fire in 84. That was one of his first two or three films. So, you know, he's been playing villains for 35 years now, pretty convincingly.
Oh, so good. Mainstream art house, he can do it all.
Yep, that's right.
I used to have nightmares about Willem Dafoe and Wild at Heart, and I was just thinking, if I'd seen The Lighthouse as a kid, I think it would haunt me, like the nightmare sequence with him.
Oh, yeah, it would have scared the hell out of me, too. Absolutely.
Wow, that's awesome. Same best actor.
The power of the Dafoe. All right, so best actress, because we both agreed Willem Dafoe would be our best actor for The Lighthouse. But what about best actress? I wonder if we picked the same person.
I hope we did.
I'm about 99.9% sure we did pick the same person.
Did you pick Lupita Nyong'o as Adelaide?
How could you not? And Red.
She needed an Oscar.
She was fantastic. You might think that the visual effects were so good that they incorporated a digital version of her as Red, because she's so different than she is as Adelaide. You have to wonder if one of her characters is just some CGI concoction. But it wasn't. It was her.
She really created two separate characters. Like, the entire cast of Us is incredible, but Lupita Nyong'o just knocks it out of the park. I was thinking, it's not like twins, like in Dead Ringers, and it's not like a character going insane, like The Shining. It's two totally separate characters, and how she created that slow rasp voice.
It's two versions.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I read that she took ballet lessons, and we'd been talking before about how she watched a list of horror movies that Jordan Peele had recommended, and that list included Martyrs, Tale of Two Sisters, Funny Games, so she dug deep.
He gave her a heck of a list, too. We looked back at that list when it came out, and we talked about it, and it was... Yeah, I mean, it was a who's who of great classic horror films. Yeah, she plays two sides, you know, sort of the opposite ends of what a character can be. She, you know, it's two sides of the same coin, I guess. You know, it's this clone, and then it's actually her. But the clone is shockingly good at portraying her throughout the film. So yeah, she, you know, and you're right, she has a great cast. Winston Duke is great. Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker are great.
Ooh, all great.
They're all competent actors and actresses that have their own thing in different movies. You know, Winston's got the Black Panther, Tim and Eric. Elizabeth Moss is now a premier actress and done a lot of horror recently. She recently did The Invisible Man as well with Lee Whannell.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I thought that was great. My runner-up to Lupita Nyong'o, if there's anyone else who got even close, it would have been Samara Weaving in Ready or Not.
That's a totally awesome runner-up. I just don't think anyone came close at all, though, to be honest.
That's a distant second, to be fair. But if there was any runner-up, it would be her. Nothing this year, that was the by far not just the best female performance, one of the best performances in horror. It might be the best performance in horror this year.
Yeah, I felt like she was operating on like a different level of acting.
Agreed.
I just love the idea of the tethered so much, and I think that could have been the idea of evil doppelgangers isn't new. And I remember, like, we looked into and like read some of Jordan Peele's influences, but the way she treated it is kind of weird and artsy and awesome.
Yes. Totally agree. So two consensus votes here for best actor and best actress.
I think we might disagree on best picture. I don't know.
I don't know. I think though that I get why we both chose. I think those are the choices that you kind of had to go with. I mean, those were the two most powerhouse performances this year that mm-hmm. we've seen. So I totally get it. All right, so here we are, the best film of the year.
Best picture.
It's voted by the luminaries here, the team at My Bloody Horrorcast. Best film of the year, Steph. What was your – did you have a runner-up to best film of the year this year?
Yes, my runner-up is Color Out of Space. It's basically a runner-up for every category I didn't pick it for.
Yep, I'm with you on that. I would say that my runner-up would probably have been Ready or Not, actually.
Ooh, interesting.
I know. Matt Bellinelli, Open, and Taylor Gillette, the writing and directing team behind Ready or Not. But yeah, that probably would have been mine, but it wasn't. Because only one film this year to me was so consistently perfect in what it was trying to do. It set the mood exactly as it needed to be. It put us in the driver's seat with the characters to where when the characters were confused.
Oh shit, we did pick the same movie. You say it.
Yeah. No, so when the characters in a weird place, we're in a weird place. Everything that we do echoes with the characters doing anything. That's Mark, great direction, great performances. It has to be Midsommar, right?
Yes, Midsommar, best picture of the year. My favorite horror movie of 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Ari Aster's second film. What a hell of a sophomore follow-up. No worry about the sophomore jinx. Same with Robert Eggers, really, with Lighthouse. But yeah, great second film to put out, along with, we could say Jordan Peele, for example, as well with mm-hmm. us. And everything it wanted to do, it did very well. It's gorgeous to look at. It's frightening. It's funny. You feel for the characters. There's some interesting, dynamics between, Jack Rayner and Florence Pugh, between Jack Rayner and William Jackson Parker. So it's not just, even though Will Poulter is sort of your typical, like, dumbass kind of stoner American, there are a lot of good character developments and interactions throughout the film as well.
The cast is great. It's like the perfect cast to be thrown into like the most artistic slasher movie of all time. We've talked about Midsommar and this is our third episode where we're going to talk about Midsommar because we loved it.
It's hard not to. It just is one of those things. It's so different than, because we talked about actually going to the theater and seeing it. We talked about, how I got there early and ended up watching it before y'all got there. And yet it put me in the perfect mood. I felt there's no one I knew around me. It felt very weird watching it. The second time I watched it at a friend's house with two of my friends, and that was recently. So I have seen the movie twice. And the second time I noticed all sorts of different things from the first time. There was something new every few minutes that I just either plot-wise that was a signal of what was yet to come, or weird things happening in the background, breathing, moving. It's kind of a little feast for the senses.
I watched it three times in theaters, and I'm actually about to remote watch it with a friend who's never seen it because I also got Midsommar for my birthday. And this will be my first time seeing it since I read this article that like kind of rounds up all these Easter eggs. I'm not like super observant, but one that I want to look for is the artwork at the beginning, and we've talked about how great the artwork is.
I went back and really concentrated on that. I tried to this time, and it's really interesting. It lays out the entire plot for us. We just don't know, right?
I can't wait to look at that this time through this lens. And yeah, I totally love Midsommar. It's beautiful. It's bright. It's probably the most vivid and colorful and brightly lit and just sun-drenched horror movie we're going to see.
Yeah, it's really... I mean, Ari Aster is like, he is part of this group of the horror renaissance, these a handful of directors right now that are changing the game as we speak, and he's right there with it.
Were there any other 2019 movies you just wanted to give a shout out to that you really liked? Or
so most of them we've mentioned so far, I did really enjoy Them That Follow.
Yes, I loved Them That Follow.
I thought it was really good. I mean, when you had Walt Goggins and Olivia Colman, which you wouldn't think you'd normally get in a... Jim Gaffigan was awesome. And I think Jim Gaffigan is actually, he's a pretty funny dude. I like his stand-up. He was excellent in the film. Caitlin Dever, the lead character, she was really good. It's an interesting little gothic thriller. More thriller than horror. There's not really much gore until the end, and even then not much. But that's fine because it has an interesting story. And pretty much anytime Walt Goggins is going to be a preacher, I'm going to watch it. So,
well, I'll just watch Walton Goggins in anything. He's great.
I know he's your favorite.
Yeah, I love him. Well, kind of in the same vein where it's not really a horror movie, I watched The Nightingale. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, it is the follow-up film from the director who did The Babadook. And it's set in Australia, and it's basically, it's a revenge film that is extremely hard to watch. Just trigger warnings, there's rape, there's violence against Native people. It's really difficult, but it is beautifully and masterfully done. It's a one-and-done watch for me. I'm not going to be able to watch those scenes again. But I was impressed. That's not what I expected that director to do next. So I recommend it, but I'm not going to watch it again.
It's a one-time deal, huh?
Yeah, I can't believe you haven't watched that one. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, I have not seen that one yet.
I also finally got to see Daniel Isn't Real, which a lot of people have, like, a lot of horror fans have been unimpressed with, and they, like, really focus on it starring two famous actors' kids. It's Susan Sarandon, Tim Robbins' son, and then it's Arnold Schwarzenegger's son. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was great. Like, it starts off with this kind of mopey guy who locked up his imaginary friend as a child. And then this guy comes back. He gets released when they're both college aged. And where it goes in the third act, I thought it was so fun and fantastical. I mean, it's definitely got some, you know, some Hellraiser and some dungeony moments, which I liked.
Okay. Yeah, the only other one that I saw, and actually I think this is one from, the other one I saw I think was from 2018, so it wouldn't count for that. But I have seen a couple streaming since we've been, dealing with COVID. I have been watching a few classics, a few things like that.
Yeah.
How about you?
Oh, yeah. I've definitely been watching some stuff. Hit me with some titles you've been seeing.
So one I saw that I really liked was the movie Upgrade.
Oh my God. Had you not seen Upgrade before?
I had not seen Upgrade before. That one missed me. That was 2018 when that came out. And, you know, it's Lee Whannell, who's responsible for both the Saw and the Insidious franchises and the new Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss, which we mentioned earlier. And I thought it was, even though, you know, it is billed as an action and a horror film, and it really does follow a lot of horror film tropes. And even though it is at its heart, probably its core an action film, but it has that kind of sort of B movie, almost kind of feel of a horror film as well. And it's kind of horrific. There's some serious, serious gore in it.
I love how Lee Whannell directs these kind of fast cuts. And he does it in The Invisible Man during this one scene at a restaurant that, like, kind of took my breath away. But you see it all the time, like nonstop in Upgrade. It's been compared a lot to RoboCop, which I totally get, but I sort of thought of it more like a buddy cop movie where the other cop is inside his brain until it goes wrong. And yeah. I like thought it was so good.
Yeah, I thought that, there's an influence from RoboCop, sure, but it's definitely its own beast. Mm-hmm. And I thought that some of the twists were fun. And just overall, it was a very, you know, a very efficient, I think clocks at an hour and a half, does everything it needs to do, good suspense. Yeah, just thought it was an overall solid film. I really enjoyed that one.
Oh, I totally loved it. And I'm excited to see whatever he makes next, because I also thought The Invisible Man was amazing, which is another movie I watched. One of the last movies I got to see in theaters before we started isolating. Yeah, totally awesome. Elizabeth Moss is crushing. I guess I have watched a fair amount of things. Okay, so I finally got to see The Bye Bye Man, which I don't recommend to anyone, but that I loved so much. I loved it, Carrie. 5 stars. Don't think it, don't say it.
Hey, I hear you. You do what you do. You got it.
Just hearing all these characters be like, don't think it, don't say it. Don't think it, don't say it. I can't get over it. It's so good.
Love it. One of my other favorites that I saw over the break was another one that was released a week before we had to go on lockdown, and that was The Hunt.
I got to watch it.
And it is, not only is the movie great, it's great. Hilary Swank, awesome. It's so much fun. It's a really good take on The Most Dangerous Game. You know, and what's interesting is our president didn't want it released originally back in the summer, or in the early fall, because it was, critical of conservatives. When in actuality, it's as critical as the liberal elite, quote unquote, that are heading up the hunt, as it is the deplorables that are the people that are the hunted. So it's kind of funny that, you know, this president got so upset about, because really it's an equal opportunity offender.
And also anything he says could only be more publicity for a film.
Exactly, which is great. So, but I mean, probably the worst curse of any film ever released. First, the president stops it from being released, and then a worldwide pandemic stops it from being released. I don't know if any movie has ever had that kind of luck.
Yeah, what a strange time for movies. I miss seeing them in theaters.
I know. But Betty Gilpin is already my top performance of the year for 2020. At this moment, she's my number one.
Damn.
I haven't seen much. To be fair, I think I've only seen a couple of movies released this year. And this is going to be a kind of a spare year, I think, because a lot of these things we're not going to get to see until much later in 2020, just because they won't have the normal, release schedule. But The Hunt, but Betty Gilpin, The Hunt is an absolute gem. Got to see it for her.
Well, The Hunt's definitely on my to-watch list, so I'll try to get to that before our next remote episode.
Right.
A movie that I saw and that totally messed me up in the best way was Violence Voyager. It's a 2018 movie, and it's animated, but he kind of uses this paper doll technique. So you're looking at this weird 2D imagery that's alongside some really messed up things. I think it's the most fucked up experimental movie I've watched in recent memory. Every time a liquid goes through one of these 2D characters, I felt sick. There's a friendly bat in the movie who laps up the fluids coming out of a mutant child body. There's like a fake game that these kids are going through only to get trapped and experimented on. It's like really unusual. And I kind of can't wait to see this director's other movie, Uchiha? I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it is like a very 2010s, now 2020 director. So yeah, I loved it. It's on Prime.
So good family-friendly film for us to watch. Okay, cool. Okay, we'll have to put that on the list as well.
Yeah, I've been recommending Violence Voyager to literally every like movie nerd I know.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit earlier this week, and I need to, I've got such a long list, but I need to put that and add that to it.
Yeah.
I also watched the Tom Savini documentary. I think it's, on Shudder, Smoke and Mirrors.
Ooh, and cool.
It's a retrospective Tom Savini's career. It's directed by a graduate of his school, of his makeup effects school, who's also now his personal assistant. So to say that it's a little biased is a gross understatement. But at the same time, it's really interesting to go back and look at how influential Savini was and really how there may not ever be another person that comes along and has an effect on the effects industry the way that Savini did, because things are just different now. You know, you've got CGI, you've got effects teams, you've got, you know, these big, big houses, kind of machines that are creating all this. And he was sort of doing it with him and a few dudes that started it up. So it really is interesting to go back and see where he came from, all the movies he starred in, directed, produced, created the effects for. So for all the film shortcomings, it had some great information. It was interesting to see who this guy was.
What horror fan doesn't love Tom Savini? And, you know, I don't think he's the type of character you would make a documentary on and you would want this, like, warts and all kind of exposure. I think we just want to see all the cool stuff that he's made and maybe some of his backgrounds. That actually sounds kind of ideal. I'll definitely watch that.
It's definitely worth seeing. There's no doubt. So, yeah, so that was a lot of fun as well.
All right. Well, I finally got around to watching I'm Dangerous tonight. Really wanted to watch it with a crowd. I waited and waited. I wanted to watch it with my friend Robert. Didn't happen. So I did finally watch it myself. It's a made-for-TV movie from 1990 starring Machen Amick, Shelley from Twin Peaks. She plays this sweet, shy girl who no one can tell is like a total babe, even though it's super obvious to me. But they put her in this oversized, like, 90s sweatshirt, and they're just like, she's just this mousy brunette. One of her professors is Anthony Perkins, and one of the people vying for this cursed material is Dee Wallace. And Dee Wallace looks nuts. She's like got a mane of curly black hair. But yeah, anyway, the Machen Amick character, it's so 90s, and what she does is she finds this cursed ancient cloak and she turns it into like a sexy dress. And it possesses people to kill each other or brings out their worst desires.
And it was Tobe Hooper, right?
Tobe Hooper.
Oh, yeah. So trashy and awesome, would that be a fair statement?
Not even trashy. It's surprisingly wholesome. I would say this is a PG-13, but almost a PG movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I am looking at some of the still shots. from the film, and she does look dangerous tonight.
Oh, she's totally dangerous.
Peligrosa de noche. Sorry, there's a cover of the I guess the Mexican release of the film. So there you go.
I love it. And you know, it's such a time capsule piece now. Like, even the mean aunt who she has to live with, and basically it's a Cinderella type story. She's basically doing all this hard work for her aunt and her spoiled cousin. And she's taking care of her grandma. The grandma's in a wheelchair, has a great wig. It's really awesome.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds like something I'll need to see as well. Let's see here.
I could keep going forever. What else have you been watching?
I'll get another one. Let's see here. I did see one called Scared of the Dark. It is on Prime.
Oh, I've heard of that.
It's a monster. So it's one of that the sort of weird series of horror subgenres. It's the aliens that want to mate with human women. So it's another one of those. So you've got this monster that is trying to spawn, but it has this weird like thing that protrudes out of its mouth when it tries to kiss somebody. It's really weird, very phallic and very strange. It's also one of those movies where the director is William Malone. He did the movie Creature. You've ever seen Creature? It's a shameless, one of the most shameless alien ripoffs. The creature looks exactly like the creature in Alien. The setup feels exactly the same. You know, it's one of those. So this one feels like, again, a lot like Humanoids of the Deep might have been, or Inseminoid, or, you know, one of those. But it's also one of those films where I call it the phantom kill shot, where someone's walking down a hallway and then you get a close up of a monster, person walking down a hallway, And then all of a sudden the monster attacks the person, but you have no idea where they're coming from. You know what I mean? Everything's so close up that you have no sense of what's happening in you know, as far as a wide shot. So very strange little movie, but it was fun. It was fun.
That sounds good. I guess I have watched more than I thought. So a movie that's definitely not new, but I never seen it before, is The Dark Backward, 1991. Carrie, you've probably seen this one, right?
I haven't seen that one. I don't think so.
Okay. I almost can't believe that this movie exists. It has Bill Paxton and it has Chuck Nelson, maybe in their best roles. It has Lara Flynn Boyle.
I vaguely recall seeing the box for this at like a video store many, many moons ago.
Oh my God. It is so good. It's so over the top. It is like this totally gross, nasty universe. And Judd Nelson is this totally hopeless stand-up comedian who grows a third arm out of his back.
Whoa.
Yeah, he's spooning himself at one point. His terrible best friend is Bill Paxton in his best role. I will never unsee Bill Paxton licking a corpse or eating this rotten chicken. It's like, it is so good. And this is such a kitschy and like grimy movie. I think Wayne Newton seems too subdued for it.
Wow.
Yeah, he's in it as the agent, and he honestly is not dialed up as far as everybody else.
You know, Paxton's career is so funny. Before he became, you know, the dramatic actor that he grew to be, you know, award nominated, you know, in really fine dramas and TV series, he was crazy. His early roles are absolutely insane. You know, again, Streets of Fire, there's another one. He plays the bartender with a, you know, a couple missing teeth. He plays all these insane characters early on in his career. It's really funny how that evolved as it went on.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, he's like a Near Dark, like he's kind of at the same level of
everything. God, Near Dark. What a great film.
Yeah, as he is in The Dark Backward. I'd say he's about parallel energies.
Okay, I can get with that. Game over, man.
Oh my God. Carrie, I really hope you watch. I know you've got a lot of stuff to watch, but The Dark Backward, I had not seen it before either. I can't believe I hadn't seen it before. You've got to watch it.
I'm putting it on the list right now. It's going on there. So yeah, I mean, I've seen a few others. I'd say those are probably the main notable ones that I've seen, you know, over the past few months.
Okay, I've just got to throw in one more.
Yeah, what you got? So
I watched O.B. Oba, The End of Civilization from 1985. Have you heard of that one? You may have seen the cover.
I don't think I've. You may have heard of it, but it's not ringing a bell.
All right, so this is like a post-apocalyptic Polish gem, and it's set during a nuclear winter where all the survivors are living in this subterranean dungeon, and they're waiting for this savior ship called the Ark. It's supposed to be an airship that's going to come, but apparently it'll only take some of them away. It's actually not as bleak as that description makes it sound, especially coming out of Poland in the 80s.
Okay.
You know what it kind of reminded me of? It kind of reminded me of like the acid rain city of like Blade Runner. But behind the Iron Curtain, there's just a lot of neons, like some cold blues, some sterile lighting, and hordes of people are fighting for these dwindling resources, which include everything from actual bread to like book pulp powder. They're like women learning to tightrope walk to try to get on this airship when it eventually comes. It's just really unique.
Interesting.
I guess those are the main ones I've been watching. Otherwise, I'm going to be rewatching a bunch of stuff. Like I just said, I'm excited to rewatch Midsommar, Colorado Space.
Yeah, there's definitely a few from last year I want to rewatch. There's a few I missed that I need to catch up on. Daniels and Real is probably right up there with the things I want to see the most at the moment.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear what you think.
I know. I'm excited about seeing it. But
holy shit, I've watched so much more. I can't believe it, but I don't want to hold this episode up forever, so we can talk about it next time.
Yeah, let's talk about next episode. We'll get some more things in there, and you know, we'll probably be coming to you while we're still on lockdown with our next one. I don't think it'll be too long from now.
Yeah. But and this is our first Zoom episode, so hopefully it doesn't sound too nuts.
Yeah, you know, I think everyone will give us a little bit of a benefit of a doubt during the quarantine. It's a quarantine cast, but you know, we appreciate y'all sticking with the My Bloody Horror Cast podcast, and thanks for listening to us.
Yeah, thank you. We hope everyone's hanging in there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm glad that we did the Oscars, even though they were a little bit late. I think it's, you know, better late than never to get those done. So if you have any opinions on those, of course, let us know. If not, then we will see you in relatively short time. Won't be nearly as long as it has been before. So we'll see you here in just a few weeks, and everyone stay safe.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.